The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Jody Jackson, Jody's Gems, on the Cardinals and what they did to New England yesterday. Coming up here momentarily, John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. It is the week that is Arizona State waiting to find out who they will play in the upcoming Peach Bowl. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, as always and through the years. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. We have television shows this week on Arizona Family Sports, on CW7, on Cox Yearview. We have content on our website. Yeah, we are all over the place. We have been doing this now for coming up on 14 years. We appreciate each and every one of you. We are self-funded. Without our partners, you will see them throughout this show. We don't get to do this, and we keep doing it year after year. The weekend was, I don't know, it had some honeydew stuff. It had me trying to find excuses to get away from honeydew stuff. I'm just not good at that. I don't know why I wasn't born with the ability to gap a spark plug or change a light bulb without it being like mental gymnastics, but that's just how it went. Our youngest son came home from college. So when your son comes home from college and he's about to be halfway through his sophomore year, you understand that he's just a slob. You understand he's just a pig. Place is a mess. But he's no different than his dad back in the day. So pretty happy about that. Let's see. Let's start with ASU, because that is what the buzz in the Valley is about. They are back at practice this week. They landed a couple of players in the transfer portal yesterday. My understanding as we sit here right now is Deuce Robinson is contemplating with the family, but it's not a done deal. That's been the headline marquee local player thinking about coming back home buzz the last couple of days. We put a little piece of social up on where Kenny Dillingham, it's like a week after Kenny's been hired, and he's at a Castile Pinnacle football game. And I'm there because my son was playing for Castile. It ended up being his very last game. But Kenny's been boots on the ground for just a few days, and he's trying desperately to get a shot to talk to Deuce Robinson about coming to ASU. He'd already committed to USC. The game is over, and I'm with Cody Cameron from Recruiting Roundup. And Cody and I are standing around. It's like 9:45, and the field is about to be dark. They're turning off the lights, and Pinnacle's team is still talking, and Kenny is still there, and he's talking to Deuce and the people around Deuce. And it was too late, from my understanding, but he stuck around for a good 15 minutes. And you look at it and say, Of the game's over, everybody's left, it's high school. When I say 15 minutes, he was talking to them for about 15 minutes. It's approaching 10 o'clock, just after 10, I finally pull out my phone and say, can you believe this, Cody? Can you believe that? Could we have seen the previous staffs, plural, sticking around on a Friday night just hoping to get a sniff, hoping to get a look? And maybe, just maybe, that's what ends up bringing Deuce Robinson back here. I don't know. He is the most gifted athlete that I've seen. Hate doing this because there's always someone else you forget. Deuce is the most talented athlete that I've seen, in a long time. Let's just put it that way. That has come out of Arizona in the high school ranks. Great baseball player. I would have to think baseball program would be involved. Who knows what the NIL would look like? Who knows if NIL is even going to be in existence here in the next few months? And you're like, what does that mean? So when the House settlement comes down, it's going to be employees. That's what's going to happen, from my view. So they're back on the field today to the business at hand. They have to prep for two different styles, two different teams in Texas and Clemson. And I'm sure that there's some similarities that Kenny will talk about. Jordan Hamm will be out at practices all week long. If you're just finding us, Jordy's out there. We're not doing the, hey, coach, are you excited for the upcoming game? Hey, coach, it must feel good to be playing in the college football playoff. Hey, coach, can you tell us what your game plan is for the upcoming? No, we don't do that nonsense. And there's way too much of that nonsense, which is why I don't go out there. So I watched a lot of basketball over the weekend, and I'll get to that in a minute because the Wildcats are just not good. And I, again, have to reiterate, I don't care. I don't care if Bobby Hurley's team wins or loses. I don't care if Grand Canyon wins or loses. I don't care if U of A wins or loses. I just want to see consistency. That's our deal. We try to hit it right down the middle, which upsets everybody on both sides, and I'm good with that. Watching my Cardinals yesterday, my Cardinals, man, they are world beaters. Oh, wait, did I mention that New England stinks? It was what you're supposed to do. It was what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have games on your schedule and knock them off and take care of business and not sit there and get all, hey, everything is solved in this market. Oh, my gosh, you see the Cardinals? They looked amazing yesterday. Okay. So now they go to Carolina and they have Seattle, or they have San Francisco and LA, I should say, to finish up. They've got to win all three, or do they? You'd have to have a lot of tiebreakers for them to make it in. There's no way that they can afford to lose, in my opinion. There's those that say, well, if they win the last two because they're divisional opponents, well, that means they lose at Carolina this week. That can't happen. But watching them play yesterday, it was a pretty vanilla game, in my opinion, outside of Jonah Williams being able to score a touchdown, which was a great play on his part. And I'm not downgrading them. It's just, if we're sitting here today saying, oh my gosh, can you believe the Cardinals beat New England? They're better than that. The expectation should be they're better than that. They are nowhere near as close as some of the teams that I'm seeing in the NFC. I watched a lot of football yesterday. It's getting to be that time of year where I do pay more attention to the NFL, where teams are starting to show their teeth, where teams are starting to get through. And, you know, when you see where Philadelphia is and you see what happened with Detroit yesterday, somewhat predictable in my opinion, but they still fought. Those teams are light years ahead of what's going on out here. The NFC West, though, I can't tell you. I can't tell you one way or the other which direction it's going to go. So let me get over to college basketball and then we'll break for Jody. I have some numbers here, so I have to look and read them to make sure I get them correct. In the last 15 games, going back to last year, the University of Arizona, bear down, Lute Olson, history, trajectory, upward, always, we are never bad. You're 7-8 in your last 15 games. 7-8. Caleb Love is supposed to be the difference maker, the guy. Now, look, it's December. He's shooting 28% this season. Like, what is going on? They had two free throws in the last minute 22 against UCLA. That's it. And UCLA beat them in a game that U of A had, I thought, all the way through. So the Wildcats have to be one of the most disappointing teams this year. I'd like to know what their NIL is top to bottom. I look at what Tommy Lloyd is trying to do in watching that game. It's just a matter of, do you have any rotation? Do you have any bigs that are consistent? Do you have anything that works downtown, the outside game? And I don't see it. Then you have Arizona State. They were handled by Florida. That game was never really in doubt. I watched all of it start to finish. Beauty, the beauty of having multiple screens here in the man cave, the Brad cave. And ASU gets handled. And then GCU, I'll give them credit for playing Georgia, and they were handled. So while all three, and look, I think U of A is going to come out of this nosedive. I could be wrong because the Big 12, if you look at the Big 12, you have Iowa State, you have Kansas, you have Cincinnati. You have a lot that you've got to navigate through this year in the Big 12. I think they're going to be able to navigate through. I think all three of our programs in state, which is what I want, are going to be playing in March. I like how they've been tournament tested with their schedules. But U of A is easily one of the most disappointing teams, if not the most disappointing team in the country. There's no other way to put it. None. You cannot sugarcoat it. It's not the ref's fault. You know, Sean Elliott's not walking through the door. Steve Kerr's not walking through the door. Gilbert Arenas isn't showing up all of a sudden. And on and on and on. All right. Jody Jackson, Jody's Gems, that is next. I am Brad Susmat. And now, because my Cardinals took care of business on Sunday, it's time to have Jody Jackson. E.D. Marshall Jewelers brings you the smiling Jody Jackson, knows all, tells all, around the Cardinals and other stuff going on in Valley sports as well. Were you pleasantly surprised, or is like, come on, Brad, it's New England. This is what was supposed to happen.
Well, smiling, it is a victory Monday. We're getting closer and closer to the holidays, and the Cardinals, while it doesn't look good at all, have a very, very slim chance. They're still alive technically in the playoff hunt with their win over the Patriots. You know, Brad, this was a weird game. We saw early in the game, you saw both sides. You saw bad snaps. Yep. You saw on the Cardinals side some direct snaps. You saw a big man touchdown. You know, the saying is it's better to be lucky than good. I think they were very lucky. I think they were good. They weren't great, you know, and they came away with this win. The first touchdown, you know, you're looking, one of my things to check off a box in this week's game was checking off those red zone woes, right? Whether it's, you know, maybe hopefully they were going to fend off a big time Patriots rush, get more space in the secondary, whatever it was going to be. I was looking for easier path to a touchdown. Well, it ended up being a Greg Dortch fumble that Jonah Williams pounced on. But I was impressed later in the game when James Conner and Trey McBride took over two drives in the fourth quarter where they were able to lengthen their lead to 30-10. Defense gave up some points late. So look, they're 7-7, which is really improved from last year. But could it have been a better win? Sure. But it was a win. I thought they played hard. I thought they played well. I still didn't understand Kyler Murray just throwing the ball up in the air, and it was an interception that would have been devastating at that point in the game. It was 16-3 and backed up in their own territory. It was negated due to the roughing the passer. So Kyler, but it isn't negated in our minds, you know. So
I'm hearing this tone in your voice of you were kissing your brother yesterday. You.
A little bit, yeah. It's kind of like you did what, I don't know, hopefully kissing your brother, it might not be like you, what you had to do, but
right.
You know, you did what you had to do. You did the thing that, you know, the Patriots certainly, your record, it's again another cliche. I don't mean to be full of cliches today, but it's you are what your record says you are. So, you know, the Patriots, despite some good play by their quarterback at times. They definitely have a really good cornerback in Christian Gonzalez, who they, of course, was a first-round pick last year in 2023. So they did, you know, they have a couple of really outstanding players, but they're not a good team. At 3-11, how can you say that they are? So they beat them. They'll move on. Carolina's a real test, though, not because of the team, but just, again, we've seen through the years, it's never easy to go east. It's never easy to have that two-day trip. It's going to be chilly, all of those things. And so we'll see. I think, you know, they've got a lot to prove in these final three games. They still can prove a lot, you know. Hopefully they're looking at it as a way to improve how good they are and not how, well, we don't deserve to be a playoff team. Hopefully that's not the mindset.
I was interested yesterday, Jody Jackson with us, Jody's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers every week. I was interested in the broadcast of how much was being made and mentioned about how Marvin Harrison Jr. has yet to show the separation. It's been picked up here a little bit, but Jody, you know how it is when the announcers go in and they have their meetings with the people from the team and the coaching staff. Somewhere along the way, it's getting out there that we're not really seeing everything we thought we'd see out of Marvin Harrison Jr. On the touchdown pass that should have been caught, that Christian Gonzalez broke up, Jay Feely went out of his way to say that was a perfectly thrown, beautiful ball right where it was supposed to be by Kyler Murray, defending him. Got to catch that ball. I'm just looking at this these next 3 weeks saying, do we need to get answers about this quarterback wide receiver connection? I don't want to turn this into every week, what's Kyler's future going to be? But we are at that point where jobs are going to be on the line, and I would say that tandem has yet to show that they've got it all figured out.
Well, I think yesterday, I mean, there was the one pass. You're right. The one, and I actually talked to Jay. I saw Jay walking through. I guess it must have been at halftime. And I said, did he have to just go up and get that? And yeah, he talked about high pointing the ball. And the thing that you're not seeing, it's two things. It's generalized separation that can be fixed by either, it could be two things, right, Brad? It can be speed, or it can be, I also have the pleasure of sitting next to Roy Green. Cardinals, great. The Jet. I know you know Roy. I mean, he's sitting next to me, and I get to talk ball with him all during the game, and it's especially fun talking about wide receivers. And the other thing is route running. You know, is there somewhere along the line, if you're just, you know, again, in college, you just run that route, you go out wide. But in the pros, are you moving? Is there a little stutter step? Is there a little something? Is there any something there that can derail that guy covering you, but yet keep you on track? And that's the thing, is I don't think he's certain, he's confident to, he's looking to, as he should be in the spot for Kyler Murray. That's number one. So now what has to happen is, I think you're right though, Brad. And look, I think he's going to be a good receiver in this league. How good is he going to be? I don't know. You know, I mean, everyone wanted to talk about Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, we haven't seen that yet, but it is still early. I think speed fixes separation. I think better route running fixes separation. But then on the one-on-one matchups, and this is what we saw yesterday, and it was on display for all to see, is that he's not very physical. You know, he is a big guy. He's got, if you look at what they're listed at, which I did at halftime just to kind of make sure, what am I seeing here? You know, Marvin is listed at like 6'3", 205. Christian Gonzalez is listed at 6'1", 201. So basically, like, Marv's a little taller. But, you know, Christian, 201 for a cornerback, that's pretty physical. A lot of times you see corners that are just really fast and they're not really big. Christian Gonzalez has that strength, upper body strength. And so with Marvin, I think it's, there are techniques that he's learning about how to be in position to win those battles. But you could see it yesterday, he's not quite there yet. And the ball's not gonna, here's the other thing, you know, on the other ball, it's like, could Murray have put a little more air under it?
Sure.
Look, I think Kyler Murray did, I have no critique on Kyler Murray to Marvin Harrison yesterday. I thought a lot of those balls were very well thrown. He threw a really good ball to Trey McBride late. I mean, Kyler Murray is still pretty good with the ball. With me, with Kyler, it's all up here. It's all the decision making and panic in the pocket that ensues. That with the you know, those two things would go hand in hand, like panic in the pocket and then decision making. But when throwing the ball to Marv yesterday, I thought those throws were pretty much on target. And you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. just has to do a better job in the future, because he's going to be facing the top cornerbacks in the league probably for the rest of his career.
Sure, but I think, Jody, that those are just two players. You look up and down the roster and there's answers, there's questions that have to be answered. And I think they're getting some of those questions answered. But I would say just their first round draft picks this year, I have yet to see what I want to see out of them. And yes, it does take time to develop, but you can't miss. This has been an organization that has missed on more than one occasion with first round picks, and it's previous administrations that were involved in it. I get it. So these last three games, whether they make the playoffs or not, I really don't care. What I want to see is something that's sustainable year in and year out, so that they are on the same level as Philadelphia, Detroit, the upper echelon of the NFL, not, well, we hope we'll win the playoff, we hope we'll get in. No, I don't want that. It's like ASU. I don't want just hope every year. I want things to be solid, dependable, reliable. And I think in the Cardinals' case, they're still like, okay, they're just another year of a mediocre team.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to build toward that. And what you can only hope is, and I agree on the first round picks. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. has not been as good as a lot of people maybe thought he was going to be. And so you are looking, look, but these next three games are huge, right? You want to see something like building toward next year, like you said. You don't care about the playoffs, and let's face it, it's very slim, right? They're waiting on the Seahawks, the Rams to lose all these games, and that may or may not happen. They have to play the Rams, oh, by the way, one of those final three games. So, you know, it is about seeing Darius Robinson. What can he do? You know, we saw him play, basically look like May was running. He kind of stopped him in his tracks. It ended up being a sack. And so what are we seeing from these guys? People have asked me, hey, I heard about Robinson. I heard, you know, everyone was raving about him. And I said, yeah, I think he's got a great makeup for this. I think he's a big, strong guy. I think he's we know all the things about him, how well he studies the game, all of that. We haven't really seen it yet. It's still been only three games coming off an injury on a, you know, in the first couple of games, he's still not getting all that many snaps. So we are hopefully going to see that in the final three games, more positive signs from these guys, because you're right, every game matters. I mean, in the game of football, you're not playing that many games, and then you have a long off season, right? And a lot of people talking about, well, Marv and Kyler need to get on the same page. They do, and they can do that in the offseason, but they also have three games here to do that, and you want to see that. And I think that's going to go a long way because, yeah, you have to build your team through the draft. Those teams you talked about, I mean, granted, you know, Detroit, Jared Goff was a guy that they had gotten from the Rams. So, you know, everybody does it a different way with their quarterback, but building through the draft is your most sustainable way to build a team. But I will say 7-7 though, Brad, again, I go back to this. It shows you that there are parts to this team that are much improved.
I agree. Jody, I agree with that, right? But I don't know if the quarterback's going to be here next year. So this whole, well, they're going to get together and work harder in the off season. I don't know that.
Well, I think there's a good chance he could be though, Brad. He could be here at least another year based on the contract. And based on, it's not just the contract. I think there is a belief that continuing to work with him, he will get even better. And I know when you talk about year seven, next year will be year seven.
Right.
I mean, he's 27 years old now.
Right.
So there's a lot of frustration in how did this not happen quicker, but it's possible he could be a late bloomer.
Very late. Very, very, very.
No, and I think we already know that. I mean, I would say this to Kyler if I was talking to him. It's that, you know, it takes time. It does. And he's had different coaches and he's had different, you know, he had the college scheme. A lot of people will wipe that out and give him a pass on that. You know, he was the guy that was supposed to make everything happen. There was too much weight on his shoulders those first years with Cliff. That's what people would say,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so maybe, and he wasn't learning the game because he really didn't. He was relying on a lot of talent. It's a lot of similarities when you see guys like a Marvin Harrison Jr. or Kyler Murray. They can rely on their sheer talent in college. And, you know, again, it's not that many games. They weren't, you know, Kyler wasn't even playing that many college. I mean, he rose up quickly, you know. And so then your first years are with Cliff. And I'm not dismissing that. I'm not. I'm really not. But now you have new coaches come in and saying, what about this? What about this? It's a different vision for him and a different, some things that he probably hadn't heard before. And so, you know, I think I'm just preparing you. I think there's a good chance he's here next year.
I will let you go off of that. Thanks for your time. That's Jody Jackson, Jody's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good, Brad. Thank you.
And we're back with more after this timeout. It is John Wilner joining us for a couple of minutes. Knows all, tells all, nationally syndicated columnist with Wilner Hotline. John joins us from his studio every week, which is at his house. And as you can see in the back corner next to the football, there are crutches. Why are there crutches in this show today?
I needed the crutches after getting beat up for my Heisman Trophy vote. My son had some knee surgery a few months ago, so they've been put in the garage. My home studio is in the garage, so they're out here for the time being.
Son's palatial estate at any
yes.
moment, it could be a car with a door going.
Right, right.
You never know what you're going to get with the Wilner Hotline segment. All right, the Heisman Trophy. How much beef feedback did you get? Criticism for your votes?
Pretty substantial amount, which is great, and it reflects the type of race it was. You could have made a great case for either Ashton Gentry or Travis Hunter. I view it as, and I voted, full disclosure, I voted Hunter first, Jenny second, Cam Scatabu third. It was the kind of race where either Gentry or Hunter would have won the Heisman in, I don't know, most of the last 10, most of the last 15 years if they were on their own. But the fact is they both had these transcendent seasons in the same fall, so you had to pick one. Gentry did something we haven't seen in, 26 years since 1988 when Barry Sanders ran for his record-breaking amount. And Travis Hunter's doing something we haven't seen since like the 20s or 30s when you had two-way players excelling on both sides of the ball. I went with Hunter. I totally understand voting for Gentry. I got no problem with it, but there were a lot of fans, especially from Boise, that did have a problem with my vote. And they, you know, hey, they beat me up. That's fine. That's all part of the deal.
Okay, so I got ripped because I'm, of course, the hometown guy that put Cam Scatabu first on my ballot.
Yep.
reasoning is 1,500 yards rushing, 500 yards receiving, played a tougher schedule than Boise. By the way, did Colorado make the college football playoff? Last time I checked, the answer is no. The downside on Cam Scataboo, and I just was hoping he'd get to New York. When I saw Cam Ward win, I was just like, you have to be kidding me. But anyway, it's one of those where when your team is picked to finish dead flat last and nobody's watching your games and nobody is talking about you nationally. And then the other side of the coin is you have a head coach at Colorado that makes sure, actually TV executives make sure that that program is on every single week in the best slots. When you have a Heisman Trophy candidate at Colorado, somehow he magically gets on a plane and shows up on a bye week on the set of College Game Day. What a shock. When you're Ashton Gentry and you're in a conference that, in my opinion, is not as deep as the type of schedule outside of Oregon that Arizona State had to play this season. Thus, my argument is compelling. I'm for the underdog. I'm for the everyman, John, and I got crushed too, and I'm good with it. So there you go.
Well, look, Scataboo was phenomenal, and all your points are completely valid, and it also gets to the interpretation of what the Heisman is, right? They say most outstanding player, but that can be viewed in any number of ways, including value. And certainly, if you're looking at it from that standpoint, Scataboo was at least as valuable to his team as Gentry or Hunter, maybe even more. I looked at him as he not only had a huge impact for them, but he kind of embodied what that program's all about now and the way Kenny Dillingham is attempting to the accountability, the toughness, the grittiness, all those things that are so important to the culture, he embodies all of it. So, yeah, I got no problem with Scataboo at all. And the reason he didn't go to New York is the Heisman a few years ago determined they were going to just have the top four. Right? Some years there were three, some years there were five, two, six. They just a few years ago said, we're going to invite the top four. And the vote, that's the way the vote broke down. Scataboo was fifth. The difference between him and Ward was such that you could have easily made a case that he should have been there as well.
It's just that was East Coast voting that goes to sleep and doesn't. It's the Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
It's Christian McCaffrey got hosed. Marshall Faulk got hosed. You're on the West Coast. Usually, not always, usually you're going to get hosed when it comes to the Heisman, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. If you aren't a big name before the season and you play on the West Coast, it is almost impossible, and we've seen that time and time again. You know, unless you play for USC, which has that national platform, and when Marcus Mariota won it for Oregon, he was the preseason favorite. But you can't be a dark horse candidate like a McCaffrey or a Scataboo on the West Coast and win that thing.
Okay, so Bill Belichick, does this change the game of college football? Meaning, we have a guy that said, yeah, I'm not really interested in the NFL. Now there are reports that maybe the Jets were interested, or he contacted the Jets, whatever it is.
The Jets aren't the NFL.
That's right. They're a notch below. That's good, John. I like that. So is it one of those where in his contract it shows he has to have $12 million in a pot, whether it's NIL, whatever they're going to call it after the house settlement, because it's going to come from Central Campus and they're going to be employees. So all this conversation really is about nothing with NIL right now, because in the next 6 months, in my opinion, things are going to change. Is it a game changer for college football to have Bill Belichick involved?
It is, for sure. I mean, you got the greatest coach in NFL history, and he's not only – is he, sorry for the double negative, not only is he not coaching a blue blood, I mean, he's not even at Ohio State or Alabama. He's at North Carolina, which has always been a second-tier football program. That makes it even more remarkable. I also would say, just to classify him as a college coach is technically correct, but it is now basically semi-pro at that level. And that's the reason he took the job, right? He's got a GM. He's going to be paying players. He's going to have to figure out salary slots for different positions year by year. That's the way college football is going to be starting next fall with the revenue sharing. So in reality, the line between the NFL and college is completely blurred. college football next year is going to be closer to the NFL than it was to, say, college football 10 years ago. So you could see why he'd be interested and why the transition may not be as difficult. Plus, he doesn't have to go to living rooms and sit on a couch and schmooze with parents and talk about their curtain selection, right? You can just recruit out of the transfer portal, as Deion has shown. Deion is the closest example, but Deion also coached in college at Jackson State for 2 years. That's a big difference, and they're obviously very different personalities.
All right, John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. This weekend, are you going to any games? Are you interested in any of these games more than another as the playoff starts this weekend?
I am not going to be attending any of those games. I'll be going to the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day. I think the most interesting game, well, I should start by saying any game that's got snow is going to be the most interesting. I am rooting for bad weather across the 40th latitude or 45th latitude because I think college football with a snow game on in a home field in the playoff would be absolutely fantastic. Over and above the weather forecast, to me, the most interesting game is Tennessee-Ohio State. It should be a great game, but the issues surrounding Ryan Day based on the Michigan game and it being in Ohio Stadium, I mean, if they get off to a bad start, they're going to get booed at home in a playoff game, and he could get fired. So, and then you've got, well, the ripple effects of Ohio State having to have conduct a coaching search. I just think it's the most important game or interesting game because of the Ryan Day situation and the Michigan issue and the fact that Ohio State could win the whole thing.
Sure.
Ohio State, I think Ohio State, Oregon, and Notre Dame are the favorites. Georgia, I'm assuming Carson Beck's not playing at all. No chance he's going to come make a miraculous recovery. So I kind of exclude them. But really, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Oregon, Amir, are the favorites. If Ohio State can get over what happened to them 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the audience here in Arizona is jumping through their television sets at you right now because you didn't even mention their beloved Sun Devils. That John Wilner, he's a hater. Well, let me just fill you in on something. It would be the biggest upset ever if they won this thing, if they even went to this thing.
Well, I think that they could win one game. I don't happen to think that Texas is all that good. I think Texas could end up losing to Clemson. And then you got ASU against Clemson. They could win that thing. They could get into the semis. I would not be completely surprised if ASU is in the semifinals. I do not expect them to get beyond the semis. I think to get to the championship game, you have got to be lined with future pros on your offensive and defensive lines, and ASU is not. And there's very few programs that are. Georgia, Notre Dame, Oregon, Ohio State are the ones that have the play at the line of scrimmage to get to the championship.
That is John Wilner, and he joins us every week on Wilner Hotline. Thanks, John.
Thanks very much, Brad.
We're back with more after this timeout.